unending grace. Thank you for your hope. Thank you for this life you gave. There is no one like you. There is no one like you, God. All my hope is in you,
careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. I think it's patently unfair that Sean and the youth are down there cooking bacon, and all those aromas are coming up here. And here I am expecting you to be attentive. Hypocrisy has nothing to do with what's going on downstairs. But it is perhaps the single biggest reason people say that they do not go to church. In fact, according to Unchristian, which was a book written by the Barna Group, according to their surveys done, among people with no religious affiliation in the age bracket between 16 and 29, 85% say the one reason they don't go to church is because Christians are hypocritical. It's an easy dodge. It's an easy excuse, that one word, hypocrisy. Someone has suggested that the best response to those who make that criticism perhaps could be, well, there's always room for one more. Or we might say, that's why I go to church. In fact, it's a hospital for hypocrites. That probably won't change anyone's mind, but of course, there's a kind of truth to what they are claiming. If you're looking for a group of people who always, always, always live up to their highest values and who never say one thing and then do another, then you'll probably need to look elsewhere because the church is guilty. But then I strongly believe that you will not find any group of any sort that is totally free of inconsistency. It just doesn't exist on this planet. We have a form of hypocrisy before us today. That is, Jesus is warning us against practicing our faith in such a way that it simply becomes a way for us to build our reputation. It's wrong, he says. It's wrong to practice faith as a means to seek approval at some level. It's wrong to practice faith in order to be noticed. It's wrong to practice faith in order to gain some level of higher esteem. And we even practice our piety just so people will sense just how faithful we are. People are desperate in their desire to be known as important. They're desperate to be known as big shots. You can see this on television and in the papers. You can see it every day. Bernie Madoff is back in the news. He is ill in prison and wants to be released. Some will remember him. He's the Wall Street investor who embezzled $65 billion from his clients' money. When interviewed by the New Yorker magazine, he told the interviewer that he was a good person. He also said that all of his investors would eventually recover their original investment and in the end would lose nothing. Well, he got his reward for such behavior. 150 years in prison, this good person turned out not to be so good as he needed to keep up appearances around him and so destroyed his life and the lives of those who supported his enterprise. I don't think it would take us very long to develop a list of persons for whom keeping up appearances is absolutely crucial to who they are. For instance, I know they are wealthy. I know they jet over all the world. I know they have had multiple marriages with people who really matter. But who are the Kardashians, and why in the world would I ever want to keep up with them? Why would I want to do that? But even the name in the program offends biblical sensibility, keeping up with the Kardashians. Not that they care about what I think. They don't. But that's how it goes. In the film The Anchorman, Ron Burgundy tries to make an impression on a woman that he was interested in by saying, "I'm kind of a big deal." It was done for the sake of humor, but I hunch that there are a lot of people who feel exactly that way about themselves. They're kind of a big deal. And then it's not so funny. Practicing piety just to be seen is wrong. Giving alms for the purpose of recognition is wrong. Praying loudly and for show is wrong. Fasting just to be seen while you're fasting is wrong. The three most important virtues of Judaism are almsgiving and prayer and fasting. And so today, as chapter 6 unfolds before us, Jesus begins going right to the heart of things in his teaching about giving. Next week, beginning at verses 5, it will be fasting and prayer. And in the scribes and the Pharisees and Sadducees, Jesus found himself often surrounded by persons who were practicing their piety for show. And he called it out. He called it out just as he saw it. It's a form of hypocrisy. In the New Testament, the only time that Jesus hurls the charge of hypocrisy was when people were doing something deliberately to appear outwardly different than they were inwardly. For example, he spoke about those people who give to charity so that they may be praised by others. That's our passage today in verse 2. Verse 2. That's our next week. We will sound another note of hypocrisy as he speaks against those who love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners so that they will be seen by others again. So stay tuned for next week. There is a passage in Matthew which demonstrates just how angry this made Jesus. He says in a dramatic explosion in Matthew 23, chiding the scribes and Pharisees for putting on appearances, he calls them out by the use of what is called the seven woes. The seven woes. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You yourselves do not enter, nor do you allow other people to enter in who are trying to. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you have succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are. Excuse me. Woe to you, blind guides. You say if anyone swears by the temple, it means nothing, but anyone who swears by the gold of the temple is bound by the oath. You blind fools, which is greater, the gold or the temple that makes the gold sacred? You also say, if anyone swears by the altar, it means nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, you are bound by the oath. You blind men, which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? Therefore, anyone who swears by the altar swears by it and everything on it. And anyone who swears by the temple swears by it and by the one who dwells in it. And if anyone who swears by heaven swears by God's throne and by the one who sits on it. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but you swallow a camel. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they're full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside you're full of dead men's bones and corruption and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You build tombs for the prophets and decorate the graves of the righteous, and you say, if we would have lived in the days of our ancestors, we would have not have taken part with them in the shedding of the blood of the prophets. And so you testify against yourselves. You are the descendants of those who murdered the prophets. Go ahead then, complete what your ancestors started. You snakes, you brood of vipers. How will you escape being condemned to hell? Seven woes. They're remarkable. They're remarkable. And speaking against hypocrisy. It's good to see this dramatized, and I encourage you at some point to maybe find a film where this takes place. In this scene, Jesus has just healed the man born blind and is now quizzed by the religious leaders, and the seven woes explode. But you can tell Jesus is not happy, and he calls them out as hypocrites. Hypocrite is a word of Greek origin, which actually means to be an actor or a stage player. In calling out hypocrisy, Jesus is encouraging us to examine our motives. Now you came here having made the jump ahead in the spring hour, daylight savings time. I think you came without any expectation, supposing that you get up Sunday morning and thinking, I'm going to church so I can pretend to be righteous and appear to be holy. I know you pretty well in this crowd, I do. And that is likely the last thing that has been on your mind as you came to worship today. So what is our motive? That's not our motive, to be sure. What is our motive? We are here to praise the living God. We are here to learn more about God's will and way. And we are here to commit ourselves to doing better at following Jesus, even thinking more about what we talked about last week. Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Has that haunted you this past week? It's a process. It's a growth. We need to be about that business. No, I know you well. They are not our motives. If you want to attend a church where you want to be seen as being in touch with the movers and shakers in your county, well, I have a hunch this really isn't the place. So let's examine our motives. Let's remain true to the biblical text of the Sermon on the Mount, and let's be attentive to the motives on the matter of giving. Jesus did not condemn people for their giving, but he did condemn the arrogance and attitude of some people who give. Sometimes givers covet the sense of prestige that comes with the gift. You know, it may be the legacy of having your name posted upon a building at a university or perhaps a medical center. Without recognition, the odds are quite good that the gift would not have been given at all. Of course, gifts must be acknowledged. Gifts must be thanked as we give expression for them. But when a person has given to bring glory to him or herself rather than to God, then all they have done is gratify their own vanity and sense of power. When celebrities and politicians seek to identify with those in need, sometimes the whole press corps is invited in to see them make their gift. It turns into an event. Oh yes, they're doing good, but notice how they're seeking the prestige that accompanies the good that they're doing. When I am good, so that others think highly of me, then I am denying my Lord. Jesus in his Sermon on the Mount is offering the better motive for giving. It's the motive that always springs from the heart. You give because you cannot not give. You must give. You give because that is who you are. That's the stuff out of which you were made. It flows from the abundance of love and compassion in your heart. It will not allow you to do anything less than give. This is the giving, where we learn that the reward we receive is the satisfaction and peace that you and I have pleased God and have made God smile. Maybe you've noticed over this past week that following the horrible tornadoes of Nashville that killed 25 and injured 88, that musical celebrities that surround Nashville have responded with generous gifts. And most notably, perhaps you have seen Taylor Swift, who responded with a $1 million gift. This young recording artist, originally from Reading, Pennsylvania, now lives in Nashville. But you and I, as we observe all of this, we're kind of left with a question, aren't we? What was her motive? What was her motive? Well, she shared her feelings, and this is what she said. Nashville is my home. And the fact that so many people have lost their homes, and so much more in Middle Tennessee, is devastating to me. That was her motive. Beyond that, I give her credit. I applaud her leadership. Because she made that gift, many others have stepped up to join the recovery effort. As I read about it, there seems to be little self-righteousness attached to her as she made her gift. It seems to have sprung from her heart, genuinely. And so it becomes the finest of all gifts, those that make God smile. Pastor Carl Reif, when announcing the time of the offering, would often say something like this, and now let us bring our gifts, let us bring our tithes, let us bring our offerings, but let us also bring ourselves and lay them upon the altar of God. One without the other, you see, is empty. Taylor Swift seems to have brought herself along with her gift. One day, Jesus was watching people drop their offerings into the treasury box at the temple. The wealthy would bring much, and some were very careful to make a big deal out of their gift, making sure that people, there were a lot of coins, making sure that people heard and saw all of the coins that were dropped into the box. Then a widow approached the box and timidly dropped in two tiny coins. They are called mites. They are the smallest coins of the Roman Empire. Jesus commends her gift, saying, "I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put more into the offering box than all the others, for they all gave out of their wealth, but she has given out of her poverty." Put in what she had to live on. She has put in everything she had. What is your motive? What's my motive? Yes, of course, in your giving first, yes, today. But what is your motive in any act of generosity that involves your time, your talent, and your treasure? I could tell so many stories about the selflessness of the persons of this congregation. It's not how much of these assets that you give or who knows about it. What matters is that I understand that the love of God compels you and me to be compassionate toward the work that God has called us to do, to be the Samaritans of life. It proceeds from a thankful heart. Your giving and mine must never be the self-righteous outcome of a sense of duty. It must not be done to enhance our own glory and prestige before the world. It must always be the outflow of a generous and thankful heart. We are called to give to God's work as Jesus Christ gave himself to us. Anything else carries the danger of hypocrisy.
I want to hear you say the words to me, well done. I want to hear you say, good and faithful servant. I want to hear you say, I've prepared a place for you. Let all the treasures of this world fade away. Jesus, you are my reward. To hear your voice on that day is all I'm living for. Jesus, you are my reward. To see your face on that day is all I'm living for. I want to hear you say the words to me, well done. I want to hear you say, good and faithful servant. I want to hear you say, I've prepared a place for you. Let all the treasures of this world fade away.
Twinkling of a